So welcome. We are Anne Risto and Pam Suddeth from the Student Support and Academic Achievement Unit of Florida's Problem Solving Response to Intervention Project. Focus on the One, Desired Results, is a multi-session experience that we want to support Florida educators in not only utilizing but also sustaining a multi-tiered system of student supports with fidelity in every district, school, and classroom. So today's guest speaker for our inaugural podcast is Rebecca Mead, the, as of today, Executive Director for Just Read Florida. Thanks for joining us today, Rebecca.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead and get started with first things first. Could you tell us a little bit about how your learning journey brought you to this point in your work as an educator here in Florida?
Absolutely. Like a lot of educators, I'm a career changer. This is my second career. 20 years ago, I was practicing law and did not see this as what was going to be my eventual journey. But it has been. And like every first year teacher, I know that any of those of us who've taught for any number of years remembers that first year. And then there's a lot in the middle. We remember all of the kids, but that first year I was trying to figure out how I was going to make this happen. And so that self-learning, that wanting to make sure that I knew everything that would help my students, I think that's what so many of us do. And part of that journey led me to Milgrades Integrated. I taught in several of interdisciplinary and integrative programs. I had 7 certifications in every subject, but reading was what kept coming to the fore, because students who can't read can't actively participate in those other subject areas in a way that's meaningful. And so I have been so lucky and fortunate that journey has led me now so that I can share the connections I see between subject areas, the benefit of having coached and working with other alt-cert educators, knowing exactly what that experience feels like, being able to make sure that we all get to the point where we're as effective as we can be.
Wow. That is just beautiful. I had no idea that you were an attorney before this. So we're learning so much about you. So this is great, and this is a wonderful stepping stone into the next question, which is, can you please quickly share about your involvement then with the BEST standards? Like, how did that come into play?
Absolutely. Carrie Sweet, who's one of my reading specialists, she and I had just done the Florida Standards Academy for the LAFS, the previous set of standards. And she and I had just created this beautiful implementation guide, still available on the Just Read Florida website. And we were in the middle of a rollout of this monumentous implementation guide, and we found out that these standards were about to change. And at first, we were a little crestfallen because we had done all of this work. But at the same time, throughout that whole process, we had been identifying things that we felt could be fixed with the standards, things that were maybe not grade level appropriate, things that left huge gaps and left teachers to try and figure out what instruction looked like without a lot of help. So we found ourselves to be some of the most knowledgeable, because of the work that we had done, people on the LAFS. So when the opportunity came up, we actually volunteered, we stepped forward, and we were involved in the process with getting our ELA organizations together, identifying teacher experts, drafting. We went through several drafts. We went through work groups. We were lucky enough to work with an online platform where we could get feedback from everybody in the state who was willing to do so. I will tell you, Carrie Sweet and I sat and read every comment that was made. So I know sometimes when things like that come out, you think that nobody's hearing you. We were hearing people. We were hearing them. We went on a listening tour to get more information. We were improving the draft based on feedback the entire time. And now we're working on the implementation guide that, again, is going to help give support, instructional support to teachers in implementing. Because that implementation, you can have the best standards, and we do have the best standards. You can have the best standards, and if you're not implementing those properly, nobody's going to see them for the way that they were intended to be. So that's our big project working forward. The standards work does not stop.
Well, that is a relief, I think, for both of us. Thank you, because Ann and I were actually a part of that and sharing our thoughts in regards to that online. So thank you. And I'm sure that several folks are going to be listening to this are going to go, oh, wow, that's great. Thank you so much for taking the time to read it. So sharing all that and you wrestling with the prior standards and creating these new standards. So what is so unique about the best standards? What would you say?
I think a lot of it has to do, one, with the experience level of the people drafting them.
Yes.
We were lucky enough in that most of us had been involved in at least one standards implementation, whether at the school or district or state level. And so we knew what that looked like. Carrie and I also both had come from a coaching background. So we have worked with teachers seeing what sort of stumbling blocks one may run into when trying to implement standards. And I think what's so unique about them is we didn't try to kitchen sink every standard, right? And now what we call standards at the grade level is now a benchmark. But we didn't kitchen sink it. We wanted to be very precise so that people knew exactly what was being asked for, not just teachers, but students and parents as well. Because I think it's important that it be communicated to students what their learner outcomes should be. So that concision, that's a word we kept throwing around, the concision, making sure that there was clarity and nothing put in that didn't relate to something else. And it was certainly difficult at first with the organization. But that part, I think, makes it unique. The focus on the reciprocal relationship between reading and writing, I think, is one that you're not going to see with other standards. Unfortunately, even though we have these beautiful integrated language arts, right, that work together and help us to communicate and then read and process the communications of others, too often in instruction, we're putting them in silos and compartmentalizing where they are. So we took great strains to sort of show where those relationships were. The EEs or ELA expectations, those sort of six expectations that go with each of the strands. So are you producing quality work because you've internalized the instruction and you know what's required for the format you're working with? Are you reading at grade level and proficiently? These overarching expectations then tie in to each of the other standards. I know we're going to talk about stacking shortly, but stacking is the other thing. And so often we talk about standards, and I know we've all seen progress monitoring or initial instruction where they're all, I'm showing you this benchmark, we're going to read this beautiful work, and I just want you to zero in on theme. Just tell me the theme. How do I know that's the theme? And we're ignoring all the other wealth that's there. And we don't do that in any practical real life experience. So the idea that we stack these benchmarks, that we work together so that students can see the relationships and the connections, that's where the true understanding and comprehension comes in, is when they see the connection between each of those component of a text or of a communique in some part. The other way in which they're different is the idea of text. We don't define text necessarily as the written word on a page. A text is any way in which information is presented where the student has to interpret it for meaning. So a film can be a text, a picture can be a text, a song can be a text. By widening that, I think that we're actually honing students' ability to discern. That's what we want, right? We want people who can look at a situation, look at whatever it is that's conveying meaning, and discern that meaning from it.
Absolutely.
And then rhetoric is big. Because, yeah.
No, that's beautiful. And then you jumped into the next portion of it just quite seamlessly, of course, which you touched on the purpose of the stacked benchmarks and what does that mean. I don't think anybody could have explained that any better than you. So thank you for that. So how, there's also that term, and you mentioned the new term. So there's also that term of the spotlight benchmark. So how does that come into play?
Absolutely. So now that we're making sure that people aren't teaching standards in isolation, we need a way, we need a nomenclature. And we actually worked with our teacher experts for quite some time about what that would look like in lesson planning. We're still working to see what that would look like in curriculum mapping. But so the idea is there are three sort of different scenarios in which a benchmark would appear in a lesson. If I'm introducing it, if I'm focusing on it and sort of making sure that we're getting to mastery at that point, or if I'm reviewing it. So it's depending on what that primary purpose of the lesson is, as to which benchmark is going to be the spotlight, the one that's taking the greater light. And we use that term because the idea is the way a spotlight works is you shift them, right? You move them to show emphasis at a given time. So those supporting benchmarks are those that are bringing out some of the roundness of that existing benchmark, that spotlight benchmark. And so sometimes you'll have a lesson that has two spotlights, and that happens, right? We've seen that where we have two leads on stage and they both pull focus. But at the same time, sometimes you'll have one spotlight and multiple supporting. And within the supporting, you're always going to have at least one, usually two or three, of your ELA expectations. That first ELA expectation about being able to cite evidence to justify reasoning, that goes with everything. We always want students to be able to explain their thinking. So that's always going to be there. So those are our language pieces. We will, in the implementation guide, have a template of a stack and several examples of stacks at different grade levels. So teachers can see how that goes, but it's also something we plan on doing professional development around.
That visual and that analogy was beautiful. That was great. Thank you for sharing that. That makes a lot of sense. And I think folks listening in on that are going to go, oh my gosh, that makes, and of course they're going to align with that beautifully. So thank you for that, Rebecca.
Well, we were blessed to have such great teacher experts, and you should have seen the metaphors that came up, but that was the one that resonated for everyone.
That is beautiful. So, you know, some people have been asking about, so are access points still going to be available, and what's the use of, you know, how does that come into play? Can you share a little bit about that as well?
Yes. There's a committee has put together, I have not yet seen the final draft, they have put together the access point. And what I love is we would get questions as they were going through the process. And one thing they kept saying is they loved it when there were clarifications, which again is another innovation that we have within these standards, where sometimes language just creates ambiguity. We then put in clarifications to clear that up, or to give instructional pointers here and there as to what would be required later or when something should start. And they found that so helpful in creating their access points. The other thing that they noticed is with the old standards, they would often have several access points tied to a particular benchmark because there were so many skills or knowledge sets or tasks tied to one. And here, we were so purposeful that it doesn't look the same because there's that one learner outcome. And very often if we had to have an additional outcome, it's still tied to that one idea. So that and the one thing they said that they found very helpful were the spiraled standards where you could see all of the progression. So that gave them sort of an idea as to where they could get that access point because they knew where it was going from grade to grade.
Perfect.
So I'm super excited to see them. They will be included on the SLEPOM site as soon as they're finalized.
Great.
Thank you.
That's so exciting because you. I want to connect it to something you mentioned earlier when you were talking about what's unique about the standards. And I heard you very clearly when you said students should know their learner outcomes. And that's really keeping in mind all of our learners when we look at the access points in that way, right? So given that, we have a range of practices in Florida around creating learning goals and essential questions. What connections can you offer our educators?
Now, I have to say, this is something that we at the Just Read Florida office have been talking about a lot recently. One is we value essential questions. And now some people use essential questions, some people use a premise that students either approve or disprove. They meet very much the same end goal of creating a framework within which the information and the learning is to take place. I know that we have seen a lot of educators want to work more with essential questions and not necessarily have the background or the training to do that in a way that they're comfortable. I know that we've gone into classrooms and we see a common board configuration, an essential question is there, and sometimes it's a yes-no question. There's a lot of interest in learning how to do essential questions correctly and effectively, and we are currently putting together a professional development around that. I think especially where it's such a hallmark of both the CIS model and close reading, having students have that purpose to go back into their text. And there are so many different ways to do it effectively, having a content or thematic question, but also having a skill question related to the techniques that the writer is using. So I think that there are ways that we are building on that. We are very lucky in that we currently have just onboarded, in the process of onboarding, 20 state regional literacy directors to help support the implementation throughout the state. And many of them are very adept with professional development. I've been lucky enough to see two of them actually present with essential questions. So one thing that they're doing in our work with us is helping us develop those modules, because we do think that it's something that's important to emphasize with educators. Another thing that we're looking at, and CPOMS is where so many of these resources can also be found. Some of them can be found on our website as we develop them. But we're also looking at the model eliciting activities on CPOMS, because that's a way where you have that scenario that acts very much in the way of an essential question as a way for teachers to get more comfortable with that frame for learning. And because it's interdisciplinary, it helps bring in those content areas, which especially within elementary is so important in building that background knowledge.
I'm making so many connections here with the resources. That's incredible. And having those additional advocates and contributions to the trainings is going to be incredible for the teachers here in Florida, especially in that quest to develop student agency and leveraging the standards to do that. That brings me to something you said also about the three areas of the standard, because when you were talking about that and depending on that primary lesson and shifting the spotlight and that beautiful, beautiful analogy you used, it really made me think about universal design for learning. And when we begin instruction around those standards, what are you suggesting to ensuring the learning for engagement, opportunities for representation, action and expression, when that core instruction is being designed for all students?
Okay, and I want to touch on that. I want to touch on how important ABL is to us. And I don't know if it's apparent. I hope that it is as more people use our standards package. But we sought to create a packet that was based on UDL principles. If you look, you'll see the information is presented several different ways according to the way that people process information differently. Where we have the implementation guide, we even have a third way that we are visually representing the standard so that people can really look and process, because it's so much information. And where we want vertical planning to happen, we knew that we needed to make that more accessible. And that's why the progressions at the front, we thought were paramount. The glossary, so that there was no confusion over those terms. You know, eliminating confusion, making sure that the language was understandable and agreed upon. Almost every element, the charts where you could see which standards and which texts go together, sort of that visual representation again, but also so that for people who need it in a list, we have it in the appendix and a list together by grade level. But throughout, we were trying to model what we hope is happening in instruction.
I think
one of the most important things too is this part that we're doing with implementation. So we have the standards here, building text sets for accessibility, right, and for representation. We have a group currently working on getting input in that. We want community input around the text sets. And we're doing training with districts on how to build this text set. And again, our literacy directors are going to be a vital part of that process. The other thing is, I think the whole reimagining of text is tied into that idea, right? But it's different representations and not necessarily being type on paper, right? The idea that we can look at that in different ways, even the way that we frame the communication strand. So it's not writing. And writing is vital and it's important, but it's communication. So we have all the forms of communication within that, and they all bear instruction. And it's trying not to default to one normative, but to emphasize the entire experience of the student. Mm-hmm. I think it's in that way that we're going to make that accessible. We also know that that requires a significant mindset shift, right? We get that, I get it. So that's something that we're only going to accomplish with professional development, is getting teachers to the point where they understand those connections and feel comfortable, even when they understand them, but the part of feeling comfortable teaching in that way. And that's what Just Read Florida is here to do, is to be able to offer those supports. So we have identified ways specifically to bring some of that in. I know that one way specifically is looking at our reading strand. We were very careful to, we do have reading prose and poetry, and we have reading informational text, but we also have reading across genres. So it's this idea that we're more fluid within this representation in helping students identify these common elements. I think too often the disconnection that we have, and I know I talked about before, but it's true. It's so true. The more you disconnect things, the less students understand, because it feels segmented. Mm-hmm. It feels so arbitrary. They're just learning a set of rules because they don't see the big picture. So I think that by removing these artifices, right, these artificial constraints, it actually is helping all learners get to that point because we've eliminated the strange change in language that we have from reading to writing. Well, it's the same thing. It's the same principles. It's the same thing happening on paper. And by eliminating those levels of confusion, I think that we're able to make it more accessible. Mm. And I know I've gone on a bit, but it's something that is so important to us in terms of one thing that we want to make sure is that purple boxing didn't happen, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So when we went through, we made sure that they were accessible. Like we went through and we also had community groups and advocacy groups sort of make sure, and that's why MTSS and PSRTI has been included in every part of implementation that we've done because we wanted to start from an equal start.
And we totally, we appreciate your passion to begin with because it is such a great game changer for all of our students just by design now. And like when you were talking about the isolation of practices, you know, that's been a struggle in our implementation of MTSS as a state. So thank you so much for bringing that point into the conversation. I could just go on and like listen and talk with you forever now, but we've got to let you go. So I thank you so much for all that information. But before we do let you leave us, we would like to know if you're willing to join us for a 90-second lightning round. It's just a little fun way for us to wrap up the discussion and allow everybody to get to know you a little bit more as a person and your role in supporting the standards here. You game to play with us?
That would be lovely.
Fantastic.
Okay. Okay, so Anne's going to put the timer on, and I'm going to pop some questions at you really quick. So the first thing that pops into your head, just please share with everybody. Okay, ready? Tell us something that is amazing about you. Or something that is amazing to you. I'm sorry, I can't even read my own words. Let's start again. Tell us something that is amazing to you. What's amazing to you?
What's amazing to me? Can I tell you just the earnestness, and I mean it sincerely, but the earnestness of the educators that we've encountered on this process, the time that they have spent, the constant calling, and I have now given my cell phone number out to all of Florida, but that has amazed me is the interest and enthusiasm that educators have to make sure that we get this right for their students.
Thank you. Favorite childhood book?
Oh, The Poky Doll Puppy.
Oh, curious. Yeah. What are you reading right now?
Another draft of the standard. The Implementation Guide is what I'm reading. I wish I were reading more fiction. I am actually going over many of the titles on our book list.
Perfect.
So most recently I was reading, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks.
Love that.
Rereading parts of it.
And it's so good. What is your favorite thing to do to relax?
Oh. Work? Oh, play with my cat.
Okay. Thank you. Is time up, Anne?
Time is up. I let that one sneak in because we had a little bit of a bump in the start. So time is up. But thank you so much, Rebecca, for not only being such a great sport, but also for sharing that passion and a portion of your day with us in quest to support our Florida educators. We want them to not only utilize, but also sustain a multi-tiered system of student supports with fidelity here in Florida, and we believe that this pivot with the best standards is going to be such a great opportunity for that. So Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate your time and your expertise.
We're over the moon excited that you spent your morning with us. Thank you.
Yay.
And thank you so much for the opportunity.